Our shapeshifter this evening is a guy you probably have not heard of. His name is Grant Field. And when you look at large companies, it's hard to believe how many are actually family-owned, particularly in financial services. So Hollard is controlled by the Enthoven family, and that's fairly well-known. But who owns Fed Group? You don't know the answer, so don't bother even thinking about it. And if you Googled it, it would take you a little while. So let me put it out of your, put you out of your misery. It's the Field family. Who are the Field family, I wonder? Well, the chief executive, Grant Field, is with us. Your dad didn't start Fed Group, but he bought a business out of the old FedSure, which is now Fed Group. Just give me a little bit of a summary.
That's roughly right. Bruce, thanks for having me on the show. What has become Fed Group was started almost 30 years ago. And at that time, the regulator really felt that having a private family owning a financial services group didn't make much sense. And so we teamed up with then FedSure, who bought 65% of this brand new company. And we ran really as a department of FedSure for about 10 years. And then, as you know, FedSure collapsed in approximately sort of 2000. And when that happened, my father had preemptive rights and bought the 65%. And so approximately year 2000, we took over what has now become Fed Group, and we became 100% family owned.
And this idea of a privately owned insurance company is bizarre, because we see the insurance industry in the hands of the large corporations. How does a family, and you're a slight Australian twang in your voice, your dad was born in Australia, what brought him here?
He was a bus driver, believe it or not, in Europe.
Obviously.
Really, really back, and perhaps a bit of a hippie back then. And he met my mother in Europe, and that's what brought him back to South Africa. And got married, lived in South Africa. One day he lost his job, and from there started his own businesses. And, you know, this was the last one he started, and it's still running today.
And is it a profitable business? I mean, you're unlisted. You have no obligation to give us any sort of idea of the financials of the business. But financial services, particularly on a smaller scale, I think you've got about 8 billion rands worth of assets under management, that can be a tough thing to run and run profitably.
It is a profitable business, and we've worked very carefully to make sure that we get the profit levels right. We are more interested in growing a sustainable business. And so because we're not chasing share price, we need to be profitable, but at the right levels, and really try and plow most of our returns back into growing the business, because it's a business that needs to reach good volumes. And once you've built a base, the more you build it, the more profitable it becomes.
I mean, you run quite a broad spread of sort of personal finance businesses. You've got a trust business, which helps people manage their money. You've got an asset management people, which helps people manage their money. You've got alternative investments. You've got a unit trust. I mean, all of this stuff is, you know, you're almost living the dream of many of people who work in corporate to say, I want to do that one day. Many people do. Many of our market commentators are doing precisely that.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think the benefit of it is, as you say, you are playing in these spaces that many people would love to play. We've built it over 30 years, so it didn't happen quickly. But how did we make it profitable and sustainable? We built a single system, and we kind of looked at those synergies, whether it be a unit trust or a pension fund or whatever it is that we run. We're very strict about making sure it fits onto the platform that we've built, and that makes us able to open up a really diverse range of products. But we also keep our products simple. So we couldn't run the most complex risk policy out there, but our risk policies we've designed in such a way that we believe in good products, but that simple product, and almost that iPad philosophy.
Yeah, but that's the point. I mean, you're a techie, but you're an engineer, and that's where you've come from. Have you worked in other large corporates before you came into the family business?
No, so I've never worked in corporates. I've always run businesses. Always run businesses. In grade one, we started
okay,
our first business.
Those.
And, you know, that was my father taught us to run businesses.
Now, take me through that. That's such an important thing, because, I mean, you actually were producing financial statements for your businesses at the age of six.
Yeah, I think, you know, and you only look back on it sort of in your later years to realize the privilege you had. We were in grade one and wanted pocket money, and my father sort of said, not a chance. And we sat down and said, well, let's try and make some money, and we wanted to sell stickers. And so he helped us buy our first inventory, And he taught us that, you know, you're going to have a CP, which is cost price, and you have an MU, which is markup, and you sell it for selling price. And we used to buy and sell these stickers at school. And slowly but surely you realize that, you know, why not just increase MU, and you earned more profit until people stopped selling. Why not let people pay you tomorrow, which you did for a while, and suddenly some people didn't pay. And so you were learning everything about credit lines to borrowing, and we were keeping it in genuine cash books and doing journals and ledgers in grade one.
That must have been quite useful.
Absolutely. I think you know, you said to me, I'm a techie, and absolutely, I'm an engineer and strong computer science background. But that sort of 15, 20 years worth of training of just understanding basic accounting, and I suppose even some law, you know, you need to understand contract law and the like. We were taught it from a very young age. And so by the time I worked at Fed Group, I had run many businesses before.
When did you get involved at Fed Group? I mean, and did that coincide with then the upgrade of the systems and the creating the single platform upon which you can then run multiple parts of the business?
I got involved in Fed Group when FedShare collapsed, because our company had relied on FedShare for all the IT and technology. At that time, I was running my own software business, and I came to my father and I said, look, I'll come and work for 3 months. I didn't want to be involved in Dad's business, but started at the bottom, actually. So there wasn't major platform plays and changes straight away, but certainly the last 12 years, because I've been there about 16 years now, but the last 12 years we started, and certainly the last 7 years we've been pushing very hard with that single system.
I mean, you mentioned a little earlier sort of Uberizing or iPadding a business, but the Ubers of the world and the Airbnbs of the world spend billions on creating the technology platforms that, for us as the users, you can sit with one hand, you can be holding an apple in one hand and munching it, and sitting with your device in the other hand and navigating the most complex computer systems algorithms that have been created in the history of humanity, with a swipe and a click and a touch, and without even being aware of the huge complexity that lies underneath. You run the risk, I suppose, as you scale and as you grow, that cost runs away with you, as the Ubers of the world have discovered.
And I think that is the difficult balance that one finds between how do you get that level of functionality. I think one of the benefits is that the cost of doing a system nowadays is a lot cheaper than it used to be. So if you think of, if you want to play in the machine learning, artificial intelligence space, that was just inconceivable only a few years ago. And yet nowadays you can almost take off-the-shelf packages, not quite, but, you know, off-the-shelf tools. Certainly you can run them in strong, let's call it Amazon Web Service environments and the like. You almost have infinite computing power at your disposal. And so you can really use a bunch of tools that make this that much more accessible.
There are, I don't know how many hundred financial services businesses in the country, how many dozens, if not hundreds, of asset management business, mom and pop shops, pop-up shops, individuals running from their laptops, fully licensed and perfectly legal operations. How do you differentiate in a market where there is a lot of wealth in South Africa, but it's massively concentrated? In order to get that money onto your platform, you've got to stand up.
Yeah, so I think the base was nice, that we had built a technology platform that was really self-sustaining. So because it's profitable, and because we'd made it in a way in which we could build different products on top of it, we already had a business that pays for itself. And what we realized, we wanted to build something that was different. And so we actually went into a room and sat there brainstorming, saying, how can we do something that is different to anything that's been done before? And how can we do something that suits needs that haven't been catered before? And what you see in our Impact Farming app is exactly that. We really realize that at the moment, people have to put money into a fund or some sort of a pooling vehicle. And there's so many layers that are almost hidden, and people get a smooth return or a volatile return, but they're very removed from what's actually happening. So what we built with Impact Farming is very unique, and you have an asset. Someone comes along and they buy an asset.
We're going to talk about Impact Farming in just a moment.
Pippa Hudson on Cape Talk, weekdays at 1.
The story of an online retailer who just seems to get it right.
What has been so critical to our thinking and our ideology behind Faces to Nature is that we want our customers to be empowered, because you can create an amazing service, but if you don't treat people well, they're still not going to feel empowered.
Robin Smith, founder of Faithful to Nature.
Lunch with Pippa Hudson, every weekday, 1 till 3, on Cape Talk. Join the conversation.
Hotel Broadwalk, hello.
Hi there. I want to book a room, one with Dora the Explorer, for my kids during our stay.
We have a library.
I mean, do you have DSTV?
No, sir.
Oh, no. Okay, never mind.
Man, we really need DSTV.
Get the DSTV Business Stay Package to give your guests up to 139 channels of extraordinary entertainment, including sport, movies, and kids shows. DSTV Business. Entertainment is our business.
When you're not feeling your best, you need a medical team you can rely on. At Life Kingsbury Hospital, we go the extra mile to provide more than just medical care. With world-class facilities and a team of dedicated specialists, we care for you thoughtfully and compassionately. In an emergency, every second counts. That's why we also offer our patients a free emergency medical paramedic service. Go to lifehealthcare.co.za for more. Life Kingsbury Hospital. Making life better.
Coming up at 8. Tonight with Lester Kivett on Cape Talk. Listen, learn, connect. Join the conversation.
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank. The Money Show.
Shapeshifters.
Our shapeshifter this evening is a guy who is in the family business of Fed Group. His name is Grant Field. He is the chief executive at Fed Group. His dad started the business and they were in business for a while with... I'm getting my feds crossed. Fedshire. Then Fedshire went down and Investec bought a piece of Fedshire. The Field family bought a piece of their business back then from Fedshire and have created this investment business, which looks at alternative investments. So for example, I mean, you guys are quite adventurous. So would you be as apprehensive as many in the asset management industry about the ANC's stances last weekend about prescribed assets? I mean, you guys are adventurous. Prescribed assets, are they necessarily a bad thing?
I don't think they're necessarily a bad thing. I think what's quite tricky is, you know, I must say I was listening to a show earlier and I was listening a little bit about that. And one sort of is worried about, is there corruption? Is something going wrong with where I put my money?
Yeah.
The same can be asked of Steinhoff. So I think that if one's forced to put money into anywhere, I think that's perhaps where the problem comes in. If we were all forced to put money into Steinhoff last year, perhaps we would have been even more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I think that's really what it's about. It's not necessarily about whether it goes behind government or not behind government, but do we have that choice?
Okay, so we had the guy who started Livestock Wealth on the show about a year, 18 months ago, and he was talking about the fact that he wants to get a unit trust for cows. And I don't think it's taken off in the way that he thought it would, and I think it's quite a complex business. Cows eat and they breathe and they die, but they also have calves and they give milk and they grow heavy and they can be slaughtered and give beef. And I think Livestock Wealth is an interesting principle. You've got something that is not dissimilar in the concept, and that is your issue around impact farming. Explain impact farming to me.
So impact farming, as I said, was something we literally went and tried to start at a blank piece of paper and say, how can investments work differently? How can it be done differently? And what we realized at the moment, if you look at a unit trust or any sort of fund, we found that there were too many layers, too much relied on sort of sentiment. And we really wanted to bring it back to the rawness of owning almost your own business, the rawness of owning your own asset. So the way impact farming works is you go and you download our app and you choose to buy an asset. You choose to buy a beehive, a blueberry bush, or a solar panel. Those are the only three assets we've got right now, to keep it simple. And when you buy that, at the same time you're signing an agency agreement that says that we are going to get someone else to farm that for you. You're not a beekeeper, you don't know how to do that, but we literally get someone who is, and they take your bee hive and they farm it for you. And they make it make honey. And then we've also got people who buy the honey. So we get those agency agreements, those sort of offtake agreements in place. And we look after that ecosystem as a platform.
So in the asset management industry, you charge a percentage of assets under management. You might charge 0.5%, a percentage point on assets under management. How do you, as an asset manager, make money out of a real business, something that's operating in the real world, not something that's just on a spreadsheet.
Sure. So if you look at an asset management business, they'll charge a percentage of those assets under management, and they then are essentially lending that money ultimately to a real business. Because this is what people seem to have forgotten, is when your money comes into a fund, they're going to charge you for looking after that money, but they, somewhere along the line, that is being lent to farmers who are farming. It's being lent to people who own property, etc. And so this is not too dissimilar, but we've cut out those layers. And then we just charge a fee. We charge an explicit fee that is related to the cost of that asset.
And at the same time, the beekeeper's got to make some money as well. So how does everybody make a slice, or in this case, I don't know, get the buzz?
Yeah, so any peer-to-peer platform, which this is, we're literally putting multiple parties together for their mutual benefit. We charge everyone, but they also get a split of it. So the flow of money is that a person comes, they buy that asset, and we now they own that asset, but we sign an agreement where someone else looks after it. In signing that agreement on behalf of the owner, the beekeeper is an agreed-upon fee where, depending on how much honey he brings in, he gets paid a percentage of that honey.
Okay, so why choose bees, blueberries, and solar panels? I mean, they're three completely different asset classes, I suppose.
What we realized is that we want to make a difference at the same time. And if we want to build something where people understand where their money's going, it's even more important. If we look at solar, it's renewable energy. There's a really good story around it. And that was the first one we actually started with, just to test it. Also, people understood it. They understood that if I buy this asset, how does it make money?
What happens if my blueberry bush gets hit by a hailstone?
So,
well, what happens if a bug comes and eats my blueberry bush? Well, what happens if the blueberries don't get picked on time and they go rotten? What happens? What happens? What happens? Where's the protection?
So we've insured everything. I mean, I think that was absolutely necessary.
It's another cost.
There is a cost there, and it's absolutely insured. And so one of the examples, we recently had someone come along and remove every solar panel off a commercial roof. 500 solar panels gone. It's fully insured. We put in new ones. We chose the assets as well to try and choose things that we've got some good, some good understanding of what's going to happen. Solar, the sun is shining. If we look at blueberries, we understand the market very well because of the partners we've chosen right up front. 20 years worth of really strong farming capability. They've got, borehole water as opposed to relying on the rain. They've got hail proof, sort of above it, etc. We've just tried to choose things that are somewhat safe, but we've also got insurance.
So what sort of returns are you delivering to investors on things like solar, on photovoltaics, on bees, on honey? Because we know honey prices have gone through the roof. It's expensive.
Yep.
I mean, and there's a big scandal around, of course, people who are mixing honey with syrups and selling syrup as honey and, the authenticity of the products. If you can do authentic product, you're probably going to make a decent margin on it.
Yeah, Bruce, so returns is always a difficult thing because people don't understand returns. If you look at even some of the advertising last year where people were trying to compare nominal returns versus effective returns and the like, when you deal with an asset, you have to take into account the fact that there's an internal rate of return, because at the end this asset's worth nothing. So what that means is you get all your money back, plus you get money on top of that. And we're doing returns of between 12% and 15%. That's what we
a year.
Per year. That's right. So they're very good returns.
So in the case of a blueberry bush, which is going to have a lifespan of what, 8 years?
8 years, that's right.
A bee, which has got a lifespan of 2 weeks, but they breed fast. so all of these various, why then, if this is such a sweet deal, aren't more asset managers embarking on this? I mean, sure, asset managers are going and investing in water projects and, sub-Saharan Africa and all that sort of stuff, but not many people are doing this kind of quite hands-on, intimate asset management sort of stuff.
Bruce, my answer is it's difficult.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult. And our benefit is we've built systems that are really good at micromanaging this type of thing. So every single one of our beehives has got fancy QR codes. We've got in-the-field software we've given to the service providers so that they can monitor what's going on. We've built a full Internet of Things capability so that we can see what's going on, when are blueberries being watered, when are hives being checked. So there's a lot of technology behind the scenes.
Would it ever get to the stage, like some paranoid parents might put a camera in the kid's bedroom, and they might go out on their first date since the baby was born, so keep an eye on the babysitter, make sure that the baby's breathing and the heart monitor can go, and they can see it on their phone, and they don't talk to each other at all because they're so busy focusing on the baby at home. Could you do that with a beehive?
Or Bruce, I mean, you know, what we've rolled out is what everyone sees. But where we're getting to is we'll be able to see the health of a hive. And in fact, you know, we're always a little bit ahead of what we show the public. We right now are monitoring hives by the sound, by the heat, what's happening internally, externally. What is the health of the queen bee? This is all stuff you can tell remotely these days. But people aren't doing it yet, but we're playing around in that
How
space.
How do you determine what the next asset class will be?
So we've identified about another 12 asset classes that we're keen on. They all have to make an impact. So we're looking at people, planet, profit, looking at those because that's what we're trying to do in this fund, if you want to call it that. But we're not rolling out new product at least for the next 6 months because we want to embed our capabilities and what we bring to the app in terms of richness of.
Do people buy these investments?
So, Bruce, we're blown away. We've had 42,000 people download the app, 30,000 people sign up, and 6,500 people actually buy through the app, and we've been running for about 4 or 5 months. That's about 48 million rand through the app and another 130 million rand worth of institutional investors in the last 6 months.
So institutional investors are putting their clients' money into these.
Absolutely, because they've now realized that there's such a good look-through of the actual assets. If you're running a green fund, you may as well stick into this because you get data that you've never seen before, and we're still delivering the returns.
12 to 14% a year.
12 to 15% per year, depending on the asset class. 12
to 15% a year. Well, how's that relative to the JSE last year?
I think it's pretty good, Bruce.
It's a really interesting story. Now, thank you for coming in and attending. Grant Field, who's chief executive at Fed Group. Bees, the birds, the bees, and the blueberries, and some solar power thrown into the mix as well. Really interesting set of investment opportunities at Fed Group. My thanks to Grant Field this evening, chief executive at Fed Group.